don't really need this fan. It makes me sick. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the fifth canto, chapter 6, entitled The Activities of Lord Rishabhdev, text number 1. And it's a verse in prose, so it's very difficult to chant collectively. Rajovacha. My dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by the practice of bhakti yoga, and attachment for fruitive activity is completely burned to ashes. For such people, the power of mystic yoga automatically arises. They do not cause distress. Why then did Rishabhdev neglect them? Purport. A pure devotee is constantly engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever is necessary for the discharge of devotional service is automatically attained. Though it may appear to be the result of mystic yoga power, sometimes a yogi displays a little yogic power by manufacturing gold. A little quantity of gold captivates foolish people, and thus the yogi gets many followers who are willing to accept such a tiny person as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a yogi may also advertise himself as Bhagavan. However, a devotee does not have to exhibit such magical wonders. Without practicing the mystic yoga process, he achieves even greater opulences all over the world. Under the circumstances, Lord Rishabhdev refused to manifest mystic yoga perfections, and Maharaj Pariksit asked why he did not accept them, since for a devotee they are not at all disturbing. A devotee is never distressed or satisfied by material opulence. His concern is how to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If by the grace of the Supreme Lord a devotee achieves extraordinary opulence, he utilizes the opportunity for the Lord's service. He is not disturbed by the opulence. A devotee of the Lord is fully dependent in devotional service on the Supreme Lord. And therefore, a devotee of the Lord is aware that the Supreme Lord is unlimited in his strength, in his power, and his opulence. A devotee is also aware that he himself is insignificant, that he is a tiny, infinitesimal spark of the energy of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, the devotee is aware that Purushamnisu, that Krishna says, I am the ability in man. And therefore a devotee is not thinking that, what if I would have mystic power? What could I not do? Right. It is not that the devotee is thinking that in the course of my service, I will try to change the world. Of course, devotees find themselves in the domain of Maya. We are here in this world of Maya, and Maya is everywhere. Especially in this age of Kali, the influence of Maya is very, very strong. Prabhupada is saying we must fight. We must fight because the scientists, the philosophers, and the politicians have combined against the Supreme Lord. They are trying to say there is no God. Krishna is not God, and so on. We are God, or so many other varieties of themes are there. So therefore, a devotee must fight. He must fight a great battle, not an easy feat at all. Surrounded by materialists, a devotee has to somehow or other establish Krishna consciousness. Have you also sometimes imagined what it would be like if you would have mystic power and what you could do to spread Krishna consciousness? Huh? Imagine, huh? We could, if you could walk through walls, right? Well, what would you do? Any suggestions from any of you? If you could walk through walls, what would you do? Tell? You are laughing then? You have any idea? If you could walk through a wall, you wouldn't use it for devotional service. Maybe. You might not use it for the... But suppose you would control the senses and the mind. And use it in devotional service. Then how would you use it? Huh? He would walk into a bank. And then? You would build Mayapur temple. Huh? Right. Yes, this is the kind of answer I'm looking for. Huh? To walk. If we'd have mystic power and we could walk through walls, some of us might walk into a bank, take the money, build Mayapur temple, and why stop there? Huh? Then you might continue, and you might spend the rest of your life walking into banks to build temples all over the world. Huh? You might. However, the Vaishnavas are not striving for mystic power. So why not? Imagine, we are all every day going out all over the world to preach, and we have to walk, and we have to go on the train, or we have to go by car, we have to travel. What if we could travel at the speed of mind? Whoop, right there. We could save so much time to preach. So why are we not pursuing these mystic powers? Of course, it takes some purity, that is true. But once, if that is guaranteed, good japa, along with the mystic power, then we could do amazing things. We could push on this movement very, very rapidly. So why not? Why are we not striving for mystic powers? This is the first question that may be raised. Yes. So the answer is that the devotee is not falsely proud. And the devotee is not thinking that everything depends on me. Yatra Krishna Yogeshwara. Wherever there was Krishna, there Arjuna was successful. Arjuna did not think, I have this bow, Gandiva, and what blessings did I not get? I even got the blessings of Lord Shiva. I have all the weapons of the devas. I have earned them. I have battled with them, struggled with them, fought with them. And ultimately, I satisfied Lord Shiva in battle. And he also gave me his weapon. So here I am, powerful as I am, ready to fight here in this battle of Kurukshetra. I will win this battle on the strength of my power. But because Arjuna was a devotee of the Lord, he was depending on the Supreme Lord, realizing that no matter how great our strength is in this world, that it's limited. Whereas the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unlimited. He has unlimited strength. So how great will our mystic power be? How great is our mystic power in comparison to the mystic power of the Supreme Lord? How great was the mystic power of Lord Brahma in comparison to the mystic power of Yogeshwar, the Supreme Mystic? Lord Brahma was thinking, this boy in Vrindavan, named Krishna, is certainly an unusual boy. He has done some interesting things. He has lifted a hill, not an ordinary feat, certainly. And for that, he deserves some recognition. But these residents of Vrindavan, they are getting carried away. They're getting carried away. They are glorifying him And they're not seeing things in perspective. Me, I, Lord Brahma, the creator, have placed various planets in their position. Now that's a whole different thing. Placing planets in their position is not something to be compared to lifting a hill, isn't it? So why are they giving so much respect to this boy, ignoring everyone else? Let me just show them my mystic power. In this way, Lord Brahma was thinking that he would show the proper perspective. But we see that he stole the calves and cowherd boyfriends of Krishna when Krishna was alone in the forest for a moment looking for a lost calf. And just then, Lord Brahma came, put them in a cave. And only for a moment, but a moment of Brahma's time is a year of our time. And we see that when Lord Brahma came back, that all the cows, all the calves and cowherd boys were there, and that Krishna had taken their place. So Krishna showed Lord Brahma right there and then that his mystic power by far exceeded the mystic power of Brahma himself. And this is the fact that the mystic power of Lord Krishna is unlimited, whereas any amount of mystic power that may be attained by any living being, even if that living being attains the supreme mystic power, within this universe there is no living being more powerful than Lord Brahma. There is none who has greater mystic power than Lord Brahma. Still, even the mystic power of Lord Brahma was insignificant in comparison to Krishna. And kota chatura nana mara mara jivati is the poet Vijayapati is saying. How many four-headed Brahmas have already lived and died? How many have lived and died? So ultimately, a devotee is not depending on his own strengths. Of course, a devotee endeavors as if he depends on his own strengths. But a devotee keeps in mind this famous analogy of the sparrow that had lost her eggs in the ocean. And it is stated that that sparrow went to the ocean and said, "Return my eggs." The ocean didn't even bother to reply. What is a sparrow? Who will even consider that sparrow? But then the sparrow said that if you don't return my eggs, I will drink all your water. Again, the ocean didn't react. But when the sparrow took up that work very seriously, with great determination, began to drink the ocean of the water, drop by drop, then when Garuda heard this news, then Garuda, he decided to help that sparrow. And of course, Garuda certainly has the potency to drink the entire ocean, since Garuda is not a material personality, but rather a spiritual personality. Therefore, the ocean then became very worried and returned the eggs. So, in the same way, we are rendering our devotional service, and we are endeavoring very much to the best of our ability, as if the result depends on us. But we know that we don't have the power to take over the world. Who are we? Who are we? It's so difficult to convince even one person. How many times are we just wondering, what next will I say? How can I make these people take to Krishna consciousness? It is so difficult. But we know that Krishna will be attracted by our service. And then Krishna will help. And his power is much greater than any amount of mystic power that we could ever have. We don't need to walk through walls and rob banks. Krishna can send unlimited money, right? Unlimited. If Krishna wants, he can send the wealthiest man in the world, right, who will bow down at your feet to build a temple. We can see that these six Goswamis in Vrindavan, they are famous for having erected various temples. The first temple on the hill of Madan Mohan, and then the famous temple of Radha Govinda, Rupa Goswami's temple. It is said that temple was 7 stories high, and on the top there was a lamp, a ghee lamp burning at night, which was so bright that even in Agra it could be seen. And Aurangzeb was saying, "What is this light?" And he later came to destroy that temple. Now, how did the six Goswamis build the temple? Did the six Goswamis go out and do a big fundraising drive? Did they go out into the cities to collect? And then did they stand there on the construction site with a helmet, with a plastic helmet on, right? Just to make sure no building materials would fall on their head, with drawings and supervising? No, we don't see any drawings of the six Goswamis like that. We are hearing that by their devotional service, by their surrender in devotional service, they were able to inspire men who were materially powerful and who were materially wealthy to construct these temples. So ultimately, the Vaishnava does not require this kind of mystic power. The fact that we are working in a different way, not exactly as the six Goswamis, is there also. We are collecting as a movement. Srila Prabhupada started collection programs in India. It was Srila Prabhupada who invented the life membership program and so many other activities. Prabhupada also had the arrangements that there would be many books printed, and that the temples would have to purchase the books, and that then the godowns or the basements of the temple would be filled with books. And Prabhupada said, "And now distribute books or starve." Yeah? So this principle of distributing books, distribute books or starve, is a good principle. It is not that we are simply chanting Hare Krishna and waiting for material wealthy men to come to help us. No, because the world is full of Maya, and the devotees of Maya, they don't sit at home, they don't sleep, they don't take a big breakfast and then think, let me take 2 hours rest. The devotees of Maya, they are very austere. They work very hard. They make many, many hours to spread their atheistic philosophies or their impersonalistic philosophies all over the world. Prabhupada said, therefore, there is a fight. We must stand up. We must do something. We must take up this mission of fighting in the battle with Maya. We must challenge Maya. We must drive the influence of Maya back and spread Krishna consciousness or knowledge about Krishna everywhere. One devotee was asking, how can we make this Krishna consciousness more attractive to the people so that they will take it? Right. But there is no need to make Krishna consciousness more attractive. Right. It's not required. We simply have to present it. The main point is we present Krishna consciousness. We present Krishna. But we must present Krishna properly. Just like here, there is a nice temple. This nice temple is not to attract the people. One might think that, well, there is a nice temple to attract the people so that they will come. Therefore, we are making a nice temple. This is not a fact. The nice temple is there to please Krishna. It is befitting. It is stated in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that Lord Krishna must be worshipped in royal opulence. So if we are worshipping Lord Krishna, it is said just like a king is being served, in that way Krishna must be served in a temple. And if we worship Krishna in that way, in royal opulence, then people will become attracted. They will see. They will become attracted automatically. So the point is that we are not aiming to please the audience. We are aiming to please Krishna. But our mission is to spread the fame of Krishna. So preaching means to spread the fame and glories of Krishna. Very simple. If we glorify Krishna very nicely everywhere, then automatically people will be attracted because Krishna is all attractive. So we don't have to break our head, how will I make Krishna consciousness more attractive to the people? Can we think of some trick to make it more attractive? No, actually our main means of preaching Krishna consciousness is to present Krishna, is to present the glories of Krishna in a very, and to worship Krishna publicly, very nicely. To chant the glories of Krishna publicly, very nicely. And then surely, some people will come and will be attracted. And that is our strength. If we think that what propaganda can we use to spread this movement, then we are missing the point, because our business is not propaganda. Our business is Harinam Sankirtan. And there is a distinction between making propaganda and preaching. Propaganda can be, we print this brochure, we print that brochure, and so on. But the aim of our brochures, the aim is to glorify Krishna. And not only to glorify Krishna, but to glorify Krishna properly. Because one cannot just whimsically glorify Krishna. One must worship Krishna in the authorized way, as Krishna himself has revealed. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. It is Krishna who reveals how he desires to be worshipped. It is Krishna who somehow or other is revealing to us what devotional service is. Otherwise, how can one serve Krishna? So, through our devotional service and by involving people in devotional service, can we spread Krishna consciousness. And this is our mission and this is our aim. So, somehow or other, our strategy is to engage people in devotional service. And that is the means to spread Krishna consciousness, somehow or other. And for that, we can use different tricks. That is all right. But the main thing is to engage people in devotional service. Not that we need to try and think of always novel ways to present Krishna consciousness. Some new trick. Of course, we can use anything and everything. Like our Bhakti Balap Puri Maharaj from Scotland, right, who years ago started the Goranga campaign. And then everywhere on buses in Scotland, they had advertisement, call out Goranga and be happy. Right? And they had many, many such advertisements. And they were using it intelligently. Because in the marathons, they did big book distributions. And then in the marathons, they would take some books and pack them together and then put some cellophane around with it. And there was printed on it, Gauranga books, right? So everyone wanted to know, what is this Gauranga? Everywhere people would see, call out Gauranga and be happy. And no one wanted to admit that he didn't know what it meant, right? So the devotees would say, can you call out Gauranga? And people would say, of course we can call out Gauranga. Everyone can call out Gauranga, right? And they said, well, then here's, you said that very nicely, then here's some Gauranga books for you. Oh, very nice. I must have them, Gauranga books. So they were using it in many ways. People had been involved in hearing and chanting the name of Gauranga. So they'd become purified. But nowadays, they are not only advertising on buses anymore, because now this is the age of cyberspace. So now they have set up a special hacking department, right? And this hacking department is sending out spam mail, right, to many people. And the spam says, call out Gauranga and be happy. And they have sent out such spam mail to over 100 million, over 100 million email addresses. So that's big, huh? That's serious spam mail. Huh? So what can we say? One can use all kinds of strategies and techniques to present Krishna consciousness. But the core of it all is simply to chant Hare Krishna. Right? The only thing that will make people Krishna conscious is chanting Hare Krishna. Right? Somehow or other, and we cannot waste too much time, right, with other things. We have to bring people to that point. So there may be a little introduction to bring people to that point where it comes chant. Right? Chant the holy name. You know? And we may do it through one trick or another. Someone may do it through yoga. And the first lesson is Hatha Yoga. The second one, it already goes beyond the yoga of the body. It goes to the yoga of the soul. And then soon it has to come to chanting of Hare Krishna. So it is the chanting of Hare Krishna that is the most powerful means to spread this movement. More powerful than going through walls with mystic power to rob banks, to build temples. You say, well, but, you know, at the same time, it's not bad. See? We cannot waste our time with robbing banks. Yeah? There's no time. We have no time for that. Yeah? We have more important things to do. We have to use our time in more important means by somehow or other engaging in Harinam Sankirtan. Then everything will follow. So we depend on Krishna rather than on mystic powers. And miracles happen in the lives of devotees. We can look at several examples of miracles. Like one example is the example of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who was in his 90s when he had a dream and Lord Nityananda ordered him to go to Vrindavan. And he walked from Bengal to Vrindavan. That in itself, in his 90s, was quite a feat. Right? Then when he came in Vrindavan, he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he's describing himself. He said, how is it possible that I'm writing? He said, I am blind. Right? My brain is not working anymore. My memory is finished. My hand is shaking very badly. Yeah? So how is it that I'm writing? It is a miracle. It is a fact that that was a miracle. In the same way, Srila Prabhupada also said, I'm an old man I came from India without any money, and I came to tell them to give up all the things they are doing. And how is it possible that this movement has spread so much? He said, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. So one can see that in Krishna consciousness, miracles are happening. And Srila Prabhupada is also explaining like that, that actually the movement of Krishna consciousness is much greater than any other movement. Some may say, well, you may say that, but there are some who have many, many followers. Many, many followers. Here in India, there are some who have very big temples and so on, and are very rich. In Gujarat, you have certain groups, they have so much cash and more than we have, right? And so on. Or at this point, Buddhism is spreading very much around the world. In Africa, you can see many, the Mohammedans, Islam is really making a lot of headway. Right? Seems to spread faster than Krishna consciousness. But our point is, no, actually, that is not very meaningful. Right? People may change their dress. People may change their designation. Someone may say, before I was a Hindu, now I'm a Christian. Some Christian may say, before I was a Christian, now I'm a Hindu. And someone may say, now I have converted to Islam. Very good. But there is no real difference because it is only external. Right. The change is only external. Right. Now I belong to this group, before I belong to that group. But actually, the real commitment is not there. So we are not worried. We have no competition, actually. We have no competition. The only thing that is there is the lack of Krishna consciousness. Not that there are certain philosophies or groups that are competing with Krishna consciousness. That's not a fact. No one is competing with us. No one can compete with us. The only thing that is missing is Krishna. Therefore, the only thing that is missing is that we are not presenting Krishna and the chanting of the holy name of Krishna to the world. That is the only thing. Right? That maybe in some places people have not sufficiently heard about the chanting of the holy name. That is all that is missing. Not that, Islam is taking over Africa. Oh, Buddhism is taking over Europe. Oh, Christianity is taking over India. Right? Not like that. Right? Not like that. It's like we have no competition, actually. Right? We have no competition. It is all a different variety of Maya. Right? And whatever God consciousness may come through in some of the mundane religions is only preliminary purification through the three modes of material nature. It is not bringing anyone to the transcendental platform, because only through devotional service can one come to the pure transcendental platform. Therefore, only the Vedas are offering the transcendental path, and only through devotional service can one actually attain the goal of life. Therefore, the only thing that is missing is people are not sufficiently exposed to transcendental knowledge. So somehow or other, let us flood the world to the best of our ability with transcendental knowledge. We could, of course, do that by developing mystic power and robbing banks and taking that money to build temples or to print unlimited books and so on. But our reputation would become spoiled along with it. And people would, a rumor would come. They're robbing the banks. We do not need to worry, because by delivering transcendental knowledge, people will voluntarily surrender their money to the lotus feet of the Lord and his devotees. Right? And the more the devotees themselves become pure and serious in their own Krishna consciousness, in their worship of Krishna, the more that preaching will be successful. If we think that preaching is making propaganda, then we will run out of the temple with flapping cloths to preach, but we will forget to worship Krishna ourselves. So we must deeply be absorbed in our worship of Krishna. And then teach others how to do the same. Then we can truly be effective in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And that is ultimately our means for this mission to be successful. Our own dedication in our own spiritual practices, and then our sincere endeavor to simply present Krishna consciousness as it is to the public at large. So are there any questions, any comments?
Yes.
Are there any examples where people have used? Are there any examples in our Krishna consciousness mission where we've used things which were, how do you say, stolen and using Krishna's service?
There's this is the example of Sri Rangam, right? And Tirumangai and his associates, who used mystic power to do exactly what Prabhu is suggesting. Okay. And it is said that they used their mystic power to rob large treasuries and ultimately to construct the temple of Sri Rangam. So it may sometimes have been employed. But our aim is not to establish big temples. To establish big temples is very secondary. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is stated that it is not our objective to construct many or big temples. Our objective is to engage people in Harinam Sankirtan. And through that Harinam Sankirtan, everything will change. So in India, it is very easy for us to take large donations and to build many, many big temples. In every town and village, we can build a palace because people are inclined. It is the tradition, it is the culture to give for temple construction. Yes, we will give. But ultimately, that is not the strength of our movement. The strength of our movement is in Harinam Sankirtan. So instead of building huge temples which require so much management and which may require professional management, and then we may have to become compromised and accept devotees who don't have the highest spiritual standards but who have professional qualification and give them leadership and so on. Better we have some temples, some big temples, and then just many smaller ones, and engage people in the chanting of the holy name. So whatever may have been there in the history should not be taken as a precedent for our movement. For our movement, Harinam Sankirtan is our mission, the spreading of this Harinam Sankirtan. That is our aim. And we do not need so many separate means to do it. We should. Therefore, it's not enough to take donations from people. When Srila Prabhupada started the Life Membership Program, the idea was that people would get books, they would get all the books, they'd get a japa mala, right? That was all part of it. Because the idea was that they would chant, that they would become devotees. So ultimately, we to just take money, not enough. Even, therefore it is also said, even prasadam distribution, by itself, if not accompanied by Harinam Sankirtan, not enough. Not enough. It is meant to be accompanied by Harinam Sankirtan. Because all of our activities must be, as Jiva Goswami says, in devotional service, must be followed and preceded by Harinam Sankirtan. So if we take someone's money, we're cheating him. We're cheating him. If we take someone's money and we're not giving him Harinam, then we're cheating him. If we give someone prasadam and we are not giving him Harinam, we have not given him everything we can give. So therefore, prasadam distribution must be accompanied by the chanting of the holy name. Right? It's like... And if you want some more evidence for that, then you can listen to the seminar of my spiritual master named Food for Death.
Alex. Maharaj, ours is a preaching movement. And in our preaching, we always used to see to it that more and more devotees come into Krishna consciousness. And when we see that more and more devotees comes into Krishna consciousness, naturally, the management, many other things also required to see to it that all the devotees, because everybody has come on a very neophyte angle.
Sure.
And we want to take them to the pure devotional platform.
Yeah.
So it will require lots of management, lots of adjustments, lots of complications will come up.
Yeah.
So on one side, all those things has to go through it. On the other side, we have to always see to it that we don't compromise our Harinam and our sadhana. So both the things to go smoothly, it is really sometimes very complicated.
Yeah.
So how to see to it that it doesn't get anywhere, we compromise our this thing and just goes very smoothly, because the devotees also have to be carried upward.
Yes, yes.
So how to do that?
I'll give first a simple answer. And that is, we must manage. A good management means to keep things simple. That's good management. So that means don't centralize. Don't centralize. If you centralize, then it means everything all centralized. Then you need big management. Right? Therefore, keep things simple. Empower groups of people to independently manage their affairs. Don't draw it all to yourself. Yeah? If we try to manage everything centralized, then in the end, we need a bigger and bigger infrastructure to deal with the ever-increasing numbers and so on. Therefore, Prabhupada said, don't centralize. I want independently thoughtful men. Right? And just local men should be local leaders. Because then things will stay simple and small. Yeah? They'll manage their own affairs. So, of course, we must provide some education for all, training for all. But we cannot manage their lives. That is not possible. Yeah. Then we get too distracted. Yeah. Some things we may have to provide for. But it is a fact that the bigger the operation gets, the more people come, the more difficult it is. So the best strategy in dealing with that is decentralize. And it also means that those who are senior, those who have the insight, like yourself, you see, Krishna has given you the intelligence to understand this point. Yeah? Then it means that also, because you've understood this, that means the responsibility is also on you to become a leader, to lead others. Yeah? Those who understand this requirement of leadership, they should become the leaders. So because you've asked this question, it means that you should become one of the leaders. Because you have understood. And how far you want to take that inside of becoming a leader, well, not just managers. Managers can come, many. There are so many managers. But leaders, those who are great spiritual examples, they're very rare to find. So we need leaders. Then managers will follow. Leaders will attract managers. But how many leaders do we have? Therefore, those who understand the need for leadership, when people start coming, due to our preaching, they should become the leaders. Not just understand. Just like Prabhupada was sitting in Vrindavan with a group of nice local gentlemen and had this discussion where he was saying that these scientists and politicians and philosophers, they're all conspiring together. Right? And we must fight. And yes, 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 the gentleman said, you are right. And Prabhupada said, so, will you do something? Or will you just sit in Vrindavan? So those who understand, they have the responsibility. Yeah. So intelligence is a dangerous thing. It gets you in trouble. Very dangerous. Anybody else? We are finished. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.